I'd like to welcome everyone that's here this morning. Glad to have you here. And I'd like to just add to what Calder has already shared. That was a really good encouragement for me. And what I have to share is going to add, I just think it's going to add right with what he had to share. So I'd like to, that's okay. Thank you. I'd like to begin with a question, who said it question. So get your thinking caps on. Who said, "Wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" Who said that?
The disciples.
Yeah, but who?
James and John.
Yeah, I heard James and John from two people. James and John. So actually, the exact quote is, "Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elias did?" So turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 9, and I want to read that short account there. Luke chapter 9, verse 51 to 56. "And it came to pass, when the time was come that he should be received up, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem, and sent messengers before his face, and they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. And they did not receive him, because his face was as though he would go to Jerusalem. And when his disciples James and John saw this, they said, 'Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elias did?' But he turned and rebuked them and said, 'Ye know not what manner of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man is not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them.' And they went to another village." So here in Luke, James and John, they were referring back to a story that happened with Elijah in 2 Kings. So I'm going to be looking at that story. But first of all, but you know, both books of 1 and 2 Kings, they're filled with stories that we can learn from and apply to our lives today. You know, there's stories in the Kings, the book of Kings, that we don't hear about very often. And so I'd like to cover some of those from time to time and just tell those stories. And like I said, they're fitting for us today because the human nature and our tendencies, they really haven't changed in the last 4,000 years. And for sure, God hasn't changed. God's the same today as he was, you know, back in the days of the kings there. Hebrews 13:8 says, "Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever." So I'll turn to that. We'll read that story in a little bit. But first, I want to kind of tell it in my own words. So there's going to be two main characters in this story, King Ahaziah and the prophet Elijah. Those are going to be the two main characters. Now, King Ahaziah, he wasn't known for his godly deeds. He didn't reign really long, actually. He only reigned for 2 years. And his predecessor was King Ahab. That was his father, who was killed in battle. Only King Ahab, if you remember, he wasn't actually in battle, so to speak, but he had disguised himself and he was covered up and he was just kind of observing the battle, and a stray arrow lodged or entered between his armor, in between the joints of the armor, and wounded him and died from that. And King Ahaziah's mother was the infamous Queen Jezebel. So from what I could find, Jezebel was still living, and I have a feeling she had a big influence on King Ahaziah in his decisions that he made during his lifetime. And then, of course, there was Elijah, and he was a prophet of God. So as I was reading parts of 2 Kings, you know, I was a little bit confused because there's two King Ahazias. There was another king that was a king of Judah, King Ahaziah. He only reigned for about a year, about 12 years later in 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 25. You can read about him a little bit there. So, and remember that, you know, the two kingdoms were divided at this time. You had the kingdom of Judah and you had the kingdom of Israel. So we're talking about the one here that was the king of Israel at this time. So the story begins with King Ahaziah falling down through a lattice structure to the ground below. And most likely this lattice structure was like a shutter that was covering his window in his bedroom chamber. And he leaned, we don't know exactly how it happened, but most likely he leaned against that lattice that was covering the window, and he fell down, the lattice broke loose. Maybe it wasn't attached properly, we don't know. Or else the other possibility was that there was a wicker-like structure that ran oftentimes around the rooftop that they lived in. And, you know, oftentimes they would go up onto the top of the roofs in those countries. And as he leaned over the wicker work lattice structure there on top of the roof, possibly he fell down to the courtyard below. But either way, he did fall down through the lattice, and it didn't kill him. It says that it immobilized him so that he had to stay in bed. And probably he was paralyzed in some way, maybe from the waist down or something like that. But for a young man who was now in the prime of his life, and, you know, he was a king, it had to be devastating as you thought about that, is this the end? You know, will I ever recover from this, you know, this, not disease, but this injury that I had? You know, my reign as a king, you know, it's just begun, and is it going to end so quickly? So he sent some of his messengers to go and inquire of the prophets of Beelzebub. Now, here's where it ties in with what Calder was just sharing. You know, Calder was talking about how we need to seek after God. Well, King Ahaziah, you know, he was not a godly man, and he wasn't seeking after God. It's just the exact opposite. He was kind of like the rich man in Luke that we were just read about. So he sent some messengers to go and inquire of the prophets of Beelzebub at their temple. And these prophets, they weren't godly men. This was the god of the Philistines, and Beelzebub interpreted means literally the Lord of the flies. So, you know, that's quite a distinction. The temple was in Ekron, which evidently there was a lot of flies in that area. Kind of like in the north, when you go up to northern Canada, Minnesota, in those areas, you have a lot of black flies. Or if you go to the south, and a little bit more south than here in Georgia, I know at times, maybe Alabama has them too, but there's a lot of gnats, and it's just, you know, if you're outside, they just seem to always want to get in your eyes. Or if you go to the seashore, those little no-see-ums want to get in your skin. It was kind of, I think the area was kind of like that in Ekron, and this god Beelzebub was called the Lord of the Flies. And then you also have Jezebel, as I mentioned earlier. I think she had a strong influence over King Ahaziah. Remember that it wasn't that long ago that Elijah had faced off against 450 prophets of Baal, and I'm going to stop right here. I just noticed Jason back there. Good to have you here. Anyhow, sorry to get distracted, but you kind of distracted me. Good to have you here. So Elijah previously, he had just faced off against 450 prophets of Baal. And Elijah prayed to God that fire would come down from heaven and consume his sopping wet altar that he had set out before the Lord. And Elijah had won a great victory. And in the aftermath, all 450 prophets, they were killed, the ones that were present anyhow. So Jezebel, she wasn't exactly happy about that, and she had declared to have Elijah's life. So King Ahaziah obviously knew about Elijah and God, but he chose not to contact him. He chose not to seek after God and what would be his future for his health. Because likely he knew that he was guilty, that he should be doing that. So as King Ahaziah's messengers were on their way to the prophet of Beelzebub, there was a man that stopped them and told them, his messengers, to turn around and give the king a different message. So they were compelled to turn around, but they listened to him because his message began with, "Thus saith the Lord, thou shalt not come down from the bed on which thou art going up, but thou shalt surely die." It's not exactly what you want to hear. And they turned and they went back to the king, and he questioned them as to why they had returned so quickly. And you know, that was a really dangerous thing for them to do, because King Ahaziah could have had their life taken because they hadn't obeyed him. They were supposed to go to the temple of Beelzebub, but instead they turned around, they came back with a different message from a different man. So these messengers, they described to him that a hairy man with a leather girdle about his loins had stopped them and given them a message for the king. And just like we would recognize Waldo in the storybook, Where's Waldo? You know, you're supposed to look through the picture and try to find Waldo in this storybook. You know, we recognize Waldo because of his distinctive garb, but Elijah also wore a distinctive garb. Some say he wore a hairy jacket with a leather girdle, and that was his distinctive garb. But anyhow, these messengers probably recognized Elijah also. And the king, he likewise recognized that it was Elijah when they described to him how this man was dressed. So as a devotee to Baal, he knew all too well that Elijah was instrumental in killing the prophets of Baal several years earlier. And he didn't have any intention of letting Elijah escape. Possibly he planned to take Elijah's life. We don't know exactly. But he probably reasoned that if I have to suffer, you know, you're going to have to suffer too. He was aware how his mother Jezebel had some of the prophets of God killed in Obadiah's day. That's in 1 Kings 18:4. It mentions it just briefly, or refers to that. So why else would he send a band of 50 men to take him back to him? He already had the prophet's message, but you know, God had other plans. God's prophet was on a mission for him. You know, this was God, the Lord Almighty. So in the meantime, Elijah, after these messengers have gone back to the king, in the meantime, Elijah, he went up on a hill and he sat waiting for the king's reply that would surely come. So from verse 15, it sounds like he may have had some trepidations, but he was well aware that God was on his side, and quite possibly he was aware of the angels that encircled him, the same way that Elisha, the prophet that followed Elijah. Elisha later saw in the hills around Samaria that there was angels just all around the hills of Samaria. And I think that probably Elijah was aware of those angels because there was an angel that spoke to him personally there. So the king did indeed, he had a reply. And he decided to send a band of 50 men. And when they came, they didn't directly seize Elijah. But the captain, I think they waited, you know, Elijah was up on the hill here, and I think they came up to the base of the hill, and it says that the captain said, "Thou man of God, the king hath said, come down." Now this wasn't only an insult to Elijah, but it was an insult to God. In the same breath, the captain was acknowledging Elijah as a man of God, a God who is the King of Kings, but then he was demanding that he be submissive to an earthly king and come down off the hill. And that's the totally wrong attitude to have towards God. We're not supposed to be, we aren't demanding of God. You know, like I said, this is God, the King of Kings, and this was Elijah's God. So Elijah responded by saying, "If I'm a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50 men with you." And that's exactly what happened. Likely it was a bolt of lightning, or it could have been a tongue of fire that came down, but it killed all 50 men and the captain, and it just burnt them up or something similar to that. So King Ahaziah, when he got news of what had happened, you know, he didn't let that stop him. He ordered another group of 50 men to take a similar message and to bring Elijah back. So I don't know how you would have felt if you were in that second group of 50 men, but these men, I'm sure, were well aware of what had happened to the previous 50 men. But, you know, they would have had the chance to revolt. They didn't have to follow the king's message, but instead they did exactly what the first group did. And this captain, he addressed Elijah as a man of God, but he said differently. The king said to come down quickly. He was getting impatient. The king was getting a little bit impatient. And once again, Elijah responded, and fire came down from heaven and consumed them also. So now we have 100 men that are destroyed, and Elijah was still up there on the hill. The king and likely his mother Jezebel, you know, they weren't going to let that stop them. You know, 100 men were dead. They wanted Elijah. So he ordered another company of 50 men to bring Elijah down to him. And so this captain, though, you can see as you read through it, and we'll read through it here in just a little bit, this captain had respect for God. He was a little wiser, and perhaps he had learned from his peers, who were now his predecessors. And no doubt he thought that he was on a mission also of death for himself and those in his command. But as he went to talk to Elijah, he abandoned the insolent, demanding tone of the previous two captains. And this is my favorite part. When he got to the hill, he fell on his knees in submission and humility, and he begged for peace, saying, "O man of God, I pray thee, let my life and the life of those 50 servants, of these 50 servants, be precious in thy sight." Notice the difference, the different attitude, the different tone. Instead of demanding, come down off the hill, come quickly down off the hill. No, it's a totally different tone and approach that he came to this man of God. You know, he was concerned about those under him. He recognized that their lives were in God's hands, that God was in control, that God was supreme. And the angel of the Lord, who was still with Elijah, told him not to be afraid, but to accompany this group of 50 men to the king. So Elijah, he came down off the hill, and he went to the king with these 50 men, because he could trust these men, because God had told him, the angel had told him, he could not to be afraid of them. So when he got there and he spoke to King Ahaziah, he plainly told the king, "Because you have sent messengers to the prophets of Baal and didn't inquire as to what God's word was, you will not get off your bed, but will die." And once again, you know, King Ahaziah, he didn't seek God's face first. He didn't seek after God. And that's what happened. He did die. It says that King Ahaziah reigned for only 2 years. So if you're not there already, turn to 2 Kings chapter 1, verses 1 to 8. 1 to 18, I'm sorry. 2 Kings chapter 1, verses 1 to 18. "Then Moab rebelled against Israel after the death of Ahab. And Ahaziah fell down through a lattice in his upper chamber that was in Samaria, and was sick, and he sent messengers and said unto them, Go, inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron, whether I shall recover of this disease. But the angel of the Lord said to Elijah the Tishbite, Arise, go up to meet the messengers of the king of Samaria, and say unto them, Is it not because there is not a god in Israel that ye go to inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord, Thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art going up, but shalt surely die. And Elijah departed. But when the messengers turned back unto him, he said unto them, Why are you now turned back? And that's this is the king now talking. They're talking to the king. And they said unto him, There came a man up to meet us, and said unto us, Go turn again unto the king that sent you, and say unto him, Thus saith the Lord, Is it not because there is not a god in Israel that thou sendest to inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron? Therefore thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art going up, but shalt surely die. And he said unto them, What manner of man was he which came up to meet you and told you these words? And they answered him, He was a hairy man, and girt with a girdle of leather about his loins. And he said, It is Elijah the Tishbite. Then the king sent unto him a captain of 50 and his 50, and he went up unto him, and behold, he sat on top of the hill, and he spake unto him, Thou man of God, the king hath said, Come down. And Elijah answered and said to the captain of 50, If I be a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And there came down fire from heaven and consumed him and his 50. And again he sent unto him another captain of 50 with his 50. And he answered and said unto him, O man of God, thus saith the king, O man of God, thus hath the king said, Come down quickly. And Elijah answered and said unto him, If I be a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And the fire of God came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. And he sent again a captain of the third 50 and his 50. And the third captain of the 50 went up and came and fell on his knees before Elijah and besought him and said unto him, O man of God, I pray thee, let my life and the life of these 50 thy servants be precious in thy sight. Behold, there came fire down from heaven and burned up the two captains of the former 50s with their 50s. Therefore, let my life now be precious in thy sight. And the angel of the Lord said unto Elijah, Go down with him, be not afraid of him. And he arose and went down with him unto the king. And he said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, forasmuch as thou hast sent messengers to inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron, is it not because there is no god in Israel to inquire of his word? Therefore, thou shalt not come down off that bed on which thou art going up, but shalt surely die. So he died according to the word of the Lord, which Elijah had spoken, and Jehoram reigned in his stead in the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, because he had no sons. Now the rest of the acts of Ahaziah, which he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So that's the story of King Ahaziah. So we know that this story was passed down and told to generations that followed because of the exchange that I read earlier in Luke between Jesus and his two disciples. So that they were well aware of this story that happened in the Kings. The old dispensation of following the law was strict and it was stern. That's what was, the old dispensation was what happened in the book of Kings. Death, curses, and destruction were the consequences of a man when he strayed from God's laws and his teachings. The Old Testament is full of examples of the, you know, how God reacted to when people disobeyed. So when as a whole, the law looked on prophets as avengers of God's righteousness. So when Elijah, when he called down fire from heaven, he was acting in the general spirit of the Old Testament law And God honored that. The spirit of the new dispensation when Jesus came to the earth is different, though. Jesus' birth was introduced with the proclamation of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And the curses of the Old Testament in Deuteronomy chapter 27 were replaced with the Beatitudes in Matthew 5. So I believe that's why Jesus rebuked James and John in Luke 9, saying, "You know not what manner of spirit ye are of, for the Son of Man has not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them." The Son of Man came to minister to people, as you know, Carl was brought out in last week's message about how we are to go be ministers to other people, to save lives. The New Testament teachings of Jesus, they don't teach retaliation in any way. Instead, Matthew 5 says that we are to love our enemies. We're to bless them that curse us. We're to do good to them that hate us. We're to pray for them that despitefully use us. And then in Romans 12, it similarly says that we're to be kindly affectionate with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. We're to recompense or to pay back to no man evil for evil. We're to avenge not ourselves, but to heap coals of fire on our enemies. We're to overcome evil with good. That's the new dispensation. So you have the new dispensation of Jesus and the old dispensation of the law, on the other hand. So is it any wonder that Jesus refused to call down fire from heaven? You know, it's easy for us to revert back to the law of retaliation of the old dispensation. So there's at least seven things that I've learned from this story, and there's probably more that could be learned from this that I think apply to our human tendencies today. So number one is the influence we have as mothers and fathers. At the end of 1 Kings, it says that Ahaziah, that he walked in the ways of his father and in the way of his mother. So we as parents, you know, we have a tremendous influence on our children for bad as well as for good. Even though, you know, our children are ultimately responsible for their own actions. And the second thing I learned was, or that stood out to me, was never violate God's laws. King Ahaziah and the first two captains, they had a choice to make in life. And if we, like them, ever find ourselves in a position where God's laws, you know, they conflict with man's will or word, then we need to give it up. And we need to say with Peter, we ought to obey God rather than men. We're not creatures of circumstance. You know, we have the power to resist evil influences that we might perceive as being bad, as well as we have the power to yield to an evil temptation. And the third thing that stood out to me was that our life hangs by the slimmest of a thread, really. You know, you think about it, you know, we're one heartbeat away from death. As you're going down the road and you pass people at 60 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, you're inches away, literally, from death as you pass each other. And just as Ahaziah's life changed in an instant when he fell down through that lattice as he was on the rooftop there, his life changed, we're no less immune to our life being cut short. Because James 4:14 says that our life is but a vapor that appeareth for a little while and then it vanishes away. Things can change in a heartbeat. The fourth thing I learned was with God on our side, we don't have anything to fear. Just as the angel told Elijah, "Be not afraid." And Elijah, with confidence, went up onto the hill. Even though he knew that the king was going to be sending messengers, he went up there confidently, unafraid, and he waited patiently for what would happen next. So as we live in subjection to God and live in his protection, we'll have his protection here as well as in the life after when we go into eternity. And the fifth thing is simple. It's just that we need to honor and recognize God as supreme. We need to come to him with humility and submission, like the third captain did. We're precious in God's eyes, in his sight. And the sixth thing that stood out to me is very similar as the fifth one there, but we need to learn from others' mistakes. The third captain, he learned from the previous two captains. You know, I don't know, he might have secretly been a believer in God, or at the least, he came to realize that God wasn't to be taken lightly. And this third captain, he showed humility, and I think so was, we must do the same thing. We need to be people of humility and learn from others. Then the seventh thing I learned was that life goes on. No sooner in life has a position, an office, or a place been vacated, you know, then it's stepped into and taken, another person takes that place whenever it's vacated. The world really can continue without us. It really can. Verse 17 says, "So he, King Ahaziah, died according to the word of the Lord, and Jehoram reigned in his stead." You know, there was another king that stepped into his place as soon as he died. He wasn't indispensable. So I'd like to close with the verse in Colossians 3, verse 1. "If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God." Thank you.